Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, where you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And we're going to jump right into our topic for this week, LLM security and privacy. Now, this is the first in a few interviews we have coming up talking about PII, or personally identifiable information, and we're going to be talking about it in the context of AI. There's a few different ways to really tackle this topic, and it is certainly top of mind for most organizations that I speak to. So we hope you enjoy this conversation, and we'll get started right after this quick break.
Are you getting pressure from finance to justify or reduce your cloud bill? CloudZero is the only cloud cost platform loved by engineers and trusted by finance. CloudZero can identify unused, idle, or over-provisioned resources, alert you to spend anomalies, and organize 100% of your spend into a framework that mirrors your business structure, like cost per customer, product feature, or team. It's the most powerful platform ever built to provide accurate, granular visibility into your total cloud spend without the typical pitfalls of legacy cloud cost management tools, like endless tagging or clunky Kubernetes support. Manage cost, optimize development, and maximize profit, all in one platform. Join companies like Rapid7, Drift, and SeatGeek by visiting cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started. That's cloudzero.com/cloudcast. Visit today to experience immediate and ongoing savings on your cloud bill.
Are you ready for the ultimate coding challenge? Stand a chance to win a Tesla Cybertruck or $100,000? All you have to do is build an app with a front end and back end and deploy it on WSO2's Corio, an internal developer platform. The more you do with Corio, the more chances you have to win. For all the details, go to corio.dev/cybertruck. Sign up, get started, and possibly win a Tesla Cybertruck or $100,000. Plus, 10 more winners get MacBook Pros. But hurry, because the challenge ends on April 30th. Good luck. And we're back, and our topic for today is security and privacy of LLMs. It's something we've kind of hinted at here and there previously, but we wanted to dedicate a show to it. So today we have Sean Falconer, and Sean, you are head of marketing developer relations at Skyflow, but also fellow podcaster, podcast host for both Partially Redacted as well as Software Engineering Daily. You've taken the reins over there. So first of all, welcome to the show, and give everyone a quick introduction if you don't mind.
Yeah, thank you so much. So as Aaron said, my name is Sean Falconer. I lead marketing and developer relations at Skyflow, but don't let the title sway you. My background is engineering. I studied computer science for a decade, have a PhD in computer science and postdoc in bioinformatics, and was actually going to be a professor and or professional researcher for a while. And I was kind of on that path, and then I ended up raising money and starting a company and left the world of academics to be the CTO and founder of a company that I ran for about 7 years, sold that company, joined Google, where I was an engineer and team lead for a number of years before joining Skyflow. And I've been here for the last 2.5 years and having an awesome time trying to make the startup go again.
Fantastic. And so let's dig into LLM security and privacy. So we see a lot of concern here on the podcast, and I talk to customers in my day job, and we've touched on it again in various past shows, as I've mentioned, but we've never really dug in deep. So let's hopefully dig into specifically about this. First, let's frame the problem. What are we talking about at the end of the day when we talk about LLM security and privacy? It sounds like a vague, high-level term. Like, give us a little more on that, Sean.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's several things that raise concern. And I see sort of security and privacy as two like related, but slightly different things. So if you think about security, like a lot of times, like security, the goal is like, let's put up like a brick wall and not allow anybody through the brick wall. But for privacy, sometimes you have to essentially punch holes in that brick wall in order to let certain amount of information through, because it's one thing to secure data and throw away the key, but that's not super useful to businesses. And we don't essentially store data to just like lock it up and never use it. So we need ways of essentially making it useful while not exposing too much of it. And that's really the sort of the balance that we've had in security and privacy for 20 years. And especially in the last half decade or so with the introduction of GDPR and all the privacy regulations around the world. But things get way more complicated when we start to move from things like databases and structured data, rows and columns, things that we understand to some degree. There's challenges there, but we understand that, okay, well, if I need to delete information or I need to find it, I got to find the row, the column of information with that. That doesn't exist in the world of essentially AI models, especially when we're talking about deep learning and neural networks and a lot of the things that are powering large language models today. Is the big problem from a privacy's perspective is there's simply no practical delete button of a LLM. So as soon as I leak customer data, proprietary information, employee information into a model through training, through inference or some other process, then there's no real way to get that back. And that becomes a big problem when, we live in the world of GDPR and the right to be forgotten, data subject requests, data residency, all these different regulations that we need to try to navigate. How do you actually, be compliant, make sure that only the right people have access to the information when they should have access in the world of LLMs? That's a very, very difficult problem to solve.
Yeah. And let me even take that one step further, because there is the whole concept of the data and the, say privacy data. And you, of course, don't want it to get out there. But at the same time, a lot of times what customers and a lot of enterprises are doing is they're taking, say, a broad-based LLM, generic LLM off the shelf, and then they're going to fine-tune it, or they're going to do RAG against it, or they're going to in some way take their customer data and make that the differentiator. And so you have this weird almost balance then I see of hey, if you mask everything, well, then it becomes undifferentiated. And so how do you handle this concept of masking the data, but also still being able to potentially differentiate? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think there's a couple different things. When we think about masking, the idea there is how do we show some limited amount of information? So if for some reason we needed to train an LLM on, our employees, social security numbers were part of that data set, then clearly we wouldn't want, you to be able to pull up my social security number as part of a prompt or something like that. So how do I make sure that, Aaron only has access to see certain types of information? So a lot of it comes down to not only masking information, but how do you govern access in a way that essentially controls who sees what, when, and where? And I think this is some of the sort of downside of or limited viewing of some of the approaches that we've taken in the space so far around let's create private LLMs. Private LLMs have value, but they don't really control that governance piece essentially. But going back to your question in terms of masking information, there are ways of essentially de-identifying certain types of information and still making it useful for training. Because if I think about someone's name, even social security number, these types of information, these identifiers that are potentially sensitive, the LLM doesn't really care that it's my name or my social security number or my credit card number or some value like that, my address, that's part of the training data. It just needs a representation of that data, because eventually it's just going to become vectorized data that's numbers in space anyway. So if I can essentially automatically detect my name as part of the training data, replace it with a de-identified form of data that's consistently generated, every time it sees Sean Falconer, it's replacing it with both the entity recognizing that it's a name plus some random value like ABC123, then training could still essentially occur as expected, because you have contextual values there. The LLM can recognize that it's a name being used. It doesn't really matter that it's actually the raw value. And that essentially allows us to keep put a gateway, a privacy gateway is what we refer to it at Skyflow, around the LLM to prevent essentially PII going into the model, preventing that problem of once it's shared, we can't really get it back. So then we're only ever sharing de-identified data. And then we can even use things like governance on the inference process so that we can control who sees what, when, and where. So that way, if a response has de-identified values in it, I can check to see who was the person who put the prompt in, what essentially policies are in place to allow them to see this information. And if they're not able to see that information, then we can essentially keep it redacted so that you can't pull up my social security number, essentially.
Ah, okay. Yeah. And so that makes perfect sense, because I was actually going to ask you in my head, I see this difference between a lot of folks when they talk about this, they talk about the fine tuning stage, if you will, the training stage. And that makes perfect sense. But then when you go to implementation phase or inferencing phase, a lot of folks might be using RAG for something like that. And some folks may be thinking about one piece, some folks may be thinking about another piece. How do organizations stitch together the end-to-end compliance of all of this? Because it gets to be a different problems at different stages of the journey, if you will, or different stages of the life cycle of an LLM. And so how do you talk through folks when they ask that question about how do I do end-to-end?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the big challenges that companies have right now is that we're looking a little bit too narrowly at this problem, if we're looking at it at all. Essentially, we're thinking like, okay, well, how do I do this at the, you know, let's say the fine-tuning phase, or I'm taking these, and then I can apply some sort of point solution, or maybe I DIY some sort of solution, but that's not looking at the full life cycle of the data, because this data that you're using for training or even building something like a RAG model, it's sitting somewhere as well within, you know, like an S3 bucket or somewhere in your infrastructure, wherever you're sort of pulling that information from. And it's going to go through some sort of pipeline down to eventually like ending up in a model. And that entire pipeline, you need to be able to control essentially who has access to that. How is the data viewed? Do your engineers, you know, have full access to the raw data? It's probably not a good idea. It's kind of like, you know, allowing them to have full access to the production database. So how do you essentially allow people to do their jobs while not essentially, you know, potentially compromising the privacy of your customers or violating some sort of compliance privacy regulation? And that full spectrum is I think where you need a more holistic sort of privacy platform approach, which is what we provide at Skyflow. So essentially, Skyflow provides a technology known as the Data Privacy Vault as a service, which gives you isolation protection and governance over sensitive customer data. It's basically like you can think of it like a shared service for secure PII management and use. Similar to like using a shared service for like identity provider, like I'm going to use Okta for managing my, you know, identities or something like that across all my services. Well, you can essentially use Skyflow for that as a way to manage customer data across all your different services, including your LLMs. So that way, if you're building a RAG model and I'm going to take a bunch of training data or documents that are internal to my company, and I want to, you know, vectorize that, turn that into embeddings, and I'm going to then use as part of like an information retrieval step as part of the inference process, I want to make sure that the rules that govern access to the raw files are also the same rules that get applied at the inference layer and at the RAG model layer. And then also holistically across the stack. That way, a customer service rep that's using the LLM has the same controlled access as they do at their CRM or at their application level. And that's essentially a service that we can build and help customers provide.
Yeah. And you mentioned there too earlier, like, made me think of this. You said, hey, you know, somebody who has full access to a customer database kind of thing. There's lots of areas here beyond LLMs. I mean, we're talking about that mainly today, but I mean, there's data lakes, there's data warehousing, there's, you know, all kinds of just production databases in general. How does this extend out, if you will, this whole concept of the vault? And I almost think of it as like a filter or a gateway kind of thing but specifically for PII information. Is that a good way to think about this? And does it apply everywhere? You know, basically everywhere there's data, it's going to apply.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea. And I think if you're doing this right, then, and you're building some sort of system, you know, infrastructure from scratch, I think you would want to start with using a vault as a sort of your core PII storage, secure storage and management, similar to how you're going to have at the base level. You're probably going to have some sort of warehousing solution. Maybe you have a data lake database, like these sort of core components. I think the data privacy vault is becoming the standard in the industry for managing sensitive data. The IEEE came out with an article about a year and a half ago about the future of privacy engineering. And essentially that article talks about how the future privacy engineering is this privacy by architecture approach through applying this pattern of the data privacy vault. And there's been a number of leading technology companies like Google, Netflix, Apple, a handful of others that sort of pioneered this approach. So it's something that's been done, but it's mostly been done by very heavily resourced, well-funded companies that can throw hundreds of engineers at different things. It hasn't necessarily been done by the smaller companies, because it's hard to build, takes a lot of time. And if it's not your core product, like, does it make sense to, you know, divert all your engineering resources to build it? And that was sort of some of the inspiration for the company I work for, Skyflow, was let's take this idea and essentially build that as a service for everyone else. And what that gives you, if you're thinking about like a data lake or a data warehouse, you know, some of the challenges that companies run into there is, I want to make sure that my analysts or my data science team can do their jobs and have the access to the data, or even like from an analytics standpoint, maybe my marketing team needs some level of access as well, so that they can do analysis to figure out like, hey, you know, how are we performing in certain geographies based on like the marketing data that we're collecting? So then how do I do that in a way that doesn't essentially risk customer data falling into the wrong hands within my own company? And, you know, either accidentally, not even necessarily someone doing something like they shouldn't be doing, but, you know, do I run a query and essentially get back Aaron's, you know, home address when I shouldn't have that, right? We want to stop that kind of stuff. So a lot of customers use us in combination with their, you know, Databricks, Snowflake, whatever they're using as part of their warehousing data lake solutions and analytics platform. And Skyflow could be integrated at different places, but you could essentially start at the ETL layer. And like you're saying, it could act like a sort of a privacy layer or gateway to the services, where as part of that ETL pipeline, Skyflow would sit at the head of it. And you would essentially, it would either detect the data automatically, which data elements are PII, if it's unstructured data, or if it's structured data, you can essentially tell it like, hey, this is someone's name, this is someone's, you know, home address. And Skyflow can, your Skyflow vote can essentially hold onto that and transform it into de-identified values that then you can run your analytics and data science and so forth on. And as well as control at a governance level, fine grained access level across, holistically across all your services.
Fantastic. Now, Sean, let me ask a follow-up to this, because I've been thinking about, we've talked to a number of API security companies here recently, and that topic has come up on the podcast before, but this may or may not fit in, but I felt it was worth asking. Like, everything we're kind of talking about is you know, tokenization and depersonalization of the data, if you will. And I think of that at like the storage level and retrieval level. But what about the whole concept of bad APIs, right? API security itself. Like, I do an API call that potentially calls information that it shouldn't. Does that fit in as an additional layer or additional vector to think about in all of this?
I don't think it's necessarily something like fundamentally different than some of the other services that would have access to the data. Like, ideally, from a security perspective and privacy perspective, you always want to de-identify data as early in the life cycle as possible. So most of the time, when we think about a modern system, where are we getting customer data? It's usually going to be some sort of collection point as part of an application. So it's like a front-end form. I ask for you to sign up with your account information, your banking information, whatever it is that I need to collect about you. And ideally, what we're doing there, if we're following sort of this data privacy vault shared service model, is I'm going to essentially take the data from your front end, put it in the vault, replace it with de-identified values, and then send that downstream. So that way, all your downstream services, whether it's your database, your log files, your API calls, whatever it's going to be, essentially doesn't actually need to see any of the raw customer data. Because what is the use case where our internal services need to see like someone's name? They don't necessarily, it's very rare that there's like a use case for that. They just need a representation of that. So by doing that, you're automatically taking a lot of your backend downstream services sort of out of scope and de-risking them, because they're never ever handling any of the sensitive data. So that way, even if something a mistake happens, coding error where an API pulls data that it shouldn't, or dumps something to a log file that it shouldn't, it's only ever dumping essentially de-identified values. So that way, if it gets compromised, no one's seeing your raw name or other values. They're seeing essentially just random strings that don't mean anything. It's similar to how things like, you know, PCI tokenization works when we're accepting a credit card. You know, we leverage payment service providers like Stripe and Adyen and so forth in order to essentially take our systems out of PCI scope and make it so that we're not handling, you know, raw credit card data. We're offloading that to a third-party provider. And in a sense, like a Skyflow vault works similarly, although you have more control of the data, and it works essentially for any kind of information that you might be storing.
Yeah. Maybe a follow-on to that, or when it comes to compliance things, because of course, you know, anytime we think about compliance and privacy, I think GDPR comes up first, but now California Privacy Act, you know, comes second.
Right.
What's your thoughts on kind of the state of the compliance industry and where we're going? And is there more things we should be aware of when it comes to privacy? What's kind of the general trends with all of that lately?
So I think one of the big things that people have to be aware of is that more and more countries are basically building into their regulations some sort of data residency requirement. And those have different flavors, but the kind of like, and it's very nuanced and gets complicated. But the gist of it is that different regions in the world want to have some say about where you're holding their citizens' information. So, you know, Canada, India, Australia, Germany, all these different countries essentially have some sort of data residency requirement. And there's different strictness around what that means, as well as guidelines around, are you able to take data, transfer data out of the country? What kind of data are you able to transfer? So that gets really complicated and difficult to sort of navigate as a business. And it also can become a barrier to go to market because, like, if I want to move into, let's say, China, then and my company depends on SaaS products that don't operate in China, how do I do that? Like, how do I essentially have my marketing team collect information on HubSpot, but HubSpot doesn't have a deployment in China? Like, these things start to get really, really complicated and difficult to deal with. So that's one of the use cases. One of the popular use cases of Skyflow is essentially we can deploy vaults to various regions around the world and make sure that your customer data, the regulated data, stays within those countries as well as the compute on it, while essentially, you know, taking your centralized cloud system or SaaS products out of scope from that. So that helps, you know, simplify some of the compliance regulations. The other big one that people need to be aware of is, you know, just last week, the EU passed their AI Act. So because of all the, obviously all the growth and interest in generative AI and large language models and everything that's happening in the world of OpenAI and ChatGPT, which is like the center for all tech drama right now, is, there's going to be more regulations around AI. Like President Biden had his executive order last year where a lot of it was around, it wasn't necessarily like here's the regulations, but they're clearly thinking about going that way. Things are moving a lot faster than they did in the social media era where it took, you know, a decade or so for the world to catch up and put forth things like GDPR. The AI regulations are happening now. So the first one to pass was Europe. It'll probably take a few years before it's actually in place where they're actually starting to, you know, fine companies for violations or hold companies accountable. But these things are definitely coming. So if you're a company that's operating in that space or thinking about investing in it, you need to be thinking about these things now, or it's going to be, you know, back to 2018 when everyone was scrambling to try to be compliant with GDPR.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you for that, Sean. Now, let's switch gears for a second. Let's talk podcasts. You also host Software Engineering Daily, and as we mentioned, we had good relationships with Jeff, the previous host, and there's probably a good bit of crossover between our audiences as well. So how are things going over at Software Engineering Daily? And give everyone a little bit about the show and a little bit of update of what's going on over there.
Yeah, absolutely. So Software Engineering Daily is one of three podcasts I actually host. It's, you know, as the name would apply, it's focused on primarily talking to engineering leaders or sometimes product leads. And there are usually 45 minutes to an hour long sort of deep dive into a particular technology or maybe some sort of problem solution that a company went through. I think some of our most popular episodes are things that have focused at, like, how did, you know, Pinterest scale Kafka or something like that? You know, the deeply nerdy technical topics. And essentially, Jeff Meyerson was the original host and creator. Unfortunately, he passed away now almost 2 years ago. And his brothers took over the show and run things behind the scenes. And then they brought myself and a couple other folks in to help guest host the show. So I started out originally writing for their blog, as well as I'd been on an episode, one of Jeff's last hosted episodes, as a guest. So I'd just been a fan of the show for years, and I got involved that way. And they approached me about coming in and starting to host shows. And I started with just a few shows, and now I host a show every Tuesday. So every Tuesday is my day. And there's a couple other hosts that are sort of the core hosts that make up the show. And we essentially release a podcast almost every day of the work week.
Yeah. And I will say this, you know, it's just a heroic effort to even, you know, get a daily podcast scheduled and produced it out the door. I mean, it's just an amazing effort. So definitely everyone go check it out if you haven't.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of fun for me, especially as my career, I've moved somewhat further away from sort of day-to-day coding and engineering. So it's a great way. It's like a forcing function for me to kind of stay tapped in and learn about what's going on in the industry and always be learning something new and get to talk to like amazing people. And I'm sure you have a similar experience with your job.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're going to wrap it up there then. Sean, other than Software Engineering Daily, any other places, everyone, if they want to learn more about all of this, where can they follow you? Where can they learn more about everything going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So if anything I said around, you know, data privacy vaults and privacy and security interests you, feel free to check us out at skyflow.com. And you can always connect with me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place and most active place for me. And if you just search my name, Sean Falconer, there's not too many of us out there. So you'll find me and I'm happy to connect.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Sean, thank you very much for your time. And on behalf of Brian and myself, thank you everyone out there for listening. We certainly appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. Please leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. For that, I'm going to close us out for this week, and we will talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.